Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly. The Premier League is back. Spurs go frigging with the Wigan 9-1. Who now can shift the Londoners from their top four spot? And after Paul Sharna handled when scoring Wigan's goal, will Spurs demand a replay? Those and the rest of the big Premier League questions tackled in today's pod. Elsewhere, the Champions League is back too. We ask, are Liverpool the Katie Price of this competition? Got some big knockers, they can't keep things covered up behind, and they could be making their exit way ahead of schedule. On top of all of that, there's Italian news with the return of King Totti and, oh look, a match-fixing scandal. There's the latest from Spain, where the build-up's already underway for Real Madrid-Barcelona. And there's the other Real, Real Salt Lake, the winners of Sunday's MLS Cup. A special report coming up in today's Football Weekly. Today's crew of pod features Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Barry Glendenning.
Hi, James.
Hello, Barry. And Owen Gibson.
Hello.
Hi. Making his return after too long, Owen.
Thank you very much.
To a near-Earth orbit. There's so much to discuss, you know, what with the return of the Champions League and all that, and many, many other stories. But we have to begin with the extraordinary events at White Hart Lane. 9-1, Tottenham Hotspur beat Wigan. Not only that, but David Bentley playing for Spurs as well. It was extraordinary.
Is that the most remarkable thing about the match, yeah.
Yeah, it was easy to sneer, isn't it? But what about Jermaine Defoe then? Hey, Sean.
Well, he was very impressive, obviously, with his five goals. I was, though, more impressed, I think, with Aaron Lennon, who not only set up a few goals, but back from injury, immediately he was only up against Eric Edmond, which is hardly fair. It's, you know, it's like the hare going up against the tortoise. But, you know, the criticism about...
Didn't the tortoise win that?
Fair point, Barry. But I thought Lennon was excellent. The criticism that's often been made about him is that he can't hit a cross to save his life. And speaking to some Spurs fans both last night and today, they pointed out that Robbie Keane didn't start, and
right.
He hasn't played well for Spurs this season, and Crouch and Defoe certainly did play well
and
together.
Cranky Owl was very impressive as well, wasn't he? I mean, you could almost say that Cranky Owl and Lennon were played better on the day than Lennon did, than Defoe did, and he came away with five goals. So, you know, it was getting a bit sort of Sunday league towards the end, wasn't it? Though that a lot of those goals came down that right side, and they were just, you know, every time they attacked, it was going in.
Given the amount of quality that Spurs have, not just on the field, but also on the bench, the people in reserve, are they now the top contenders to break into the top four this season?
Well, it seems to change every week, it seems to me. You know, kind of one of them will have a decent week, Villa will have a good week, or Man City, not so much recently, but certainly on this season, they would have a good week, and we talk about them as the most likely two. And, you know, I suppose based on the evidence of this weekend, you would say Spurs, but they haven't necessarily done it against the biggest teams yet, have they?
I have no faith in them at all. I could be proved wrong and made to look a clown again, but I just have no faith in Tottenham to keep up a challenge till the end of the season and get into the top four.
Now, Jermaine Defoe, though, hey. I know you're saying that everybody else played better, but he was the fellow who got five. It was, producer Ben points out, a five-goal haul that included the second fastest hat-trick in Premier League history, scored in 7 minutes. He could have had plenty more as well. And
sorry, I have to ask, who's the fastest?
Producer Ben? Robbie Fowler against Arsenal. There you go.
I know it wasn't the biggest defeat either, because United beat somebody 9-0.
Ipswich.
Well, there you go.
That was a game in which Andy Cole, Andrew Cole, scored five goals. It was probably called Andy back then. But how many of Spurs' goals yesterday were sold by or scored by former Portsmouth players?
Crancher,
Crouch, Defoe.
Yeah,
7.
There you go. Remarkable. Bob Rudge says, does the fact... This one's a bit counter-current, as it were. Bob Rudge tweeting in, and then Sean Ingle has written this down on the back of an envelope, thank you. I think it says, does the fact, says Bob Rudge, that Defoe is guaranteed to be on the plane to the World Cup underline England's lack of quality up front? He's not very good, says Bob Rudge, the day after Defoe nabs five goals in one game.
I think one thing to say is that Jermaine Defoe is top scorer in the Premier League at the moment. He scored 11 goals. He's ahead of Fernando Torres. He's ahead of Drogba. He's ahead of Darren Bent. Also, though, I think the other thing is, you look at the competition, he's up against other England strikers. Peter Crouch has scored two goals this season and had 36 shots. So he's got a shots-to-goal ratio of 5%. So he's been very wayward. Emil Heskey has scored one goal in 339 minutes of football. According to these are Opta stats.
How many shots for
Emil Heskey's had four shots.
Only four shots.
In
so he's got a pretty good goals.
Three of them are still whistling through the air. Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of goals, in terms of actual shot ratio, he's got he's better than Wayne Rooney. He's better than Colin Cole. He's better also than Darren Bent, Jermaine Defoe.
Right.
So, I mean, I think Defoe has his flaws, and you wouldn't want to play him necessarily with Wayne Rooney, because I think Capello likes someone to hold the ball up, which is why he plays Heskey. But certainly as someone that could be an impact sub with 20, 25 minutes to go, I think he'd be dangerous at the World Cup.
I think if you look at where he was at the beginning of the season, which was, you know, perhaps in most people's eyes not even on the plane, he's already come a long way, hasn't he? You know, people are talking, the debate is now, you know, would he perhaps start rather than even being on the bench? And, you know, I think most people would still say that, you know, as an impact substitute, it's probably where he'll be used for exactly the reasons that Sean said. But, you know, he's no doubt he's had a very good start to the season.
I think Bob Rogers, being incredibly harsh, criticised anyone the day after they scored five goals. And they were good goals. Like, they weren't exactly tap-ins or anything. He's got great technique. He's strong. He's got great balance. You know, he runs. He's got his head up. He's looking around to see what's going on. And he seems to be one of not many English strikers who've, you know, sort of hit in the magic formula that if you hit the ball on target, there is a very good chance it will go in.
So the debate is whether he can do it against the top teams, isn't it? You know,
actually, he has had 36 shots on target this season, scored 11, which is an all right shot percentage, but it's not as good as Emmanuel Adebayor.
I think I'm right in saying that he's had 17 goals in his last 17 games for club and country.
Oh, this is like a stat.
It's a stat.
I'm waving my stat lightsaber, right, Jimbo? Right. What are you coming back with?
I'm going to give you a bit of stat lightning. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, where are the cameras when you need them?
Where indeed. That's going to be on my grave, I think. Now, let's move on then. Chelsea, forget Kaká, here's Kakuta.
Incredibly impressive at the weekend. It was, given that it was a fairly routine 4-0 victory, if there's such a thing. I mean, all the debate and all the attention this morning and on Sunday was obviously on the appearance of Kakuta, who, under the original FIFA ban, shouldn't even have been playing, of course.
He had a four-month ban along with Chelsea's transfer suspension thing.
That's right, but given that Chelsea have had the ban suspended while they appeal it, they can now not only sign players during the January transfer window, but they can also play Kakuta in the meantime. He did look quick. He looked, you know, highly impressive. And if you take as a good guide of a player, you know, the comments of his teammates, well, they all seem to say that he's got, you know, the most skill at the club, which is a hell of a recommendation to make of an 18-year-old who's playing with
18. I thought it was 15. Or something.
18, not 15. Yeah, it's 15 when he signed. 15, he looks 15.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What was he 15 when he originally signed then?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. But in general terms, at Chelsea, plenty of injuries, but they made short shrift of Mick McCarthy's side.
Absolutely. I mean, they were, I think, you know, it was over as a game after 11 or 12 minutes when they were 2-0 up, and Wolves didn't really come back into it after that, and it could have actually been a lot more, to use the as the cliche goes. But I think you're right. I mean, they seem to cope very well with losing key players, and the general assessment that they'll be very very difficult to stop for the title probably holds true now. You
five,
know, I think.
5 points clear of United, who beat Everton with a cracking goal from Darren Fletcher. Very impressive. Chelsea midweek have Porto. They're already qualified, of course, as are Porto. United, who are they playing?
Besiktas.
Oh, thank you very much. And 3 points further back from United, with a game in hand, are Arsenal, who lost, of course, Saturday at Sunderland, Barry.
Yes, they did.
Yes.
Great win for Sunderland, who are well able to turn on the style against big teams at home. They've beaten Liverpool at home, they've beaten Arsenal at home, drew with Manchester United away. But Sunderland are now, they're losing games away from home. Their form is desperate. They've got beaten by Stoke, Burnley, Birmingham and Tottenham. They should have, you know, should be beating teams like Stoke, Burnley, Birmingham, Tottenham if they have aspirations of finishing in the top seven. Some are even saying they're good enough to finish in the top four. I mean, the fourth place is up for grabs. There aren't many teams sort of making a surge for it.
Right.
Villa and Spurs and Sunderland are all losing matches they shouldn't be losing if they have aspirations of getting into the Champions League next season.
Interesting. Is it simplistic to say Arsenal hadn't lost a game in 13 and then Robin van Persie gets injured and bang, there's your effect immediately?
I think it was a little bit of that, but I think it was more to the Arsenal had several injuries. And Arshavin, I assume, because he played a couple of games the week before, was rested. They looked lethargic, Arsenal, from what I've seen. They didn't really go there and impose themselves. It was, to be honest, they played a little bit like that against Wolves in the first half an hour, then Wolves gifted it to them. But Sunderland barely gave them a shot.
On the subject of Robin Van Persie, of course, being injected with the... We sort of mainlining afterbirth or something, is it?
Well, they're all gone off. It just shows that, you know, no footballer, one of them goes and does something, then they all flock after him and like... zombies, you know, must go and get placenta rubbed in my leg. But apparently, I read in the paper this morning that this Serbian doctor, who is, you know, the placenta thing is her baby, if you'll pardon the expression, she has done a runner, apparently. So Serbian government officials are questioning whether she has a license to practice her
really?
Particular brand of voodoo.
But it was such a good idea after all.
Yeah. A couple of people
but yeah, I think
in.
Frank Lampard's gone over to have it done as well, and somebody else.
Glenn
it's the
Johnson?
New, it's the new
Glenn
falling Johnson, out of nightclubs at 3 o'clock, obviously.
Well, yeah. Remember the bicycle shorts thing that people used to wear about 91?
Those funny nose things to help the breathing,
I heard a story once about just a measure of footballers and their inability to think for themselves. Something Gary Neville has been complaining about in his column in the Times in Malta.
Which is probably ghosted for him, but yeah.
I doubt it.
Right.
But, you know, the gang of players were waiting in an airport to fly wherever they were going, and their manager stood up and walked off. All the players got up and walked off after him, and he was just going for a pee. Like, you know, they just followed him.
Now, a couple of posts on the placenta issue. Maverick 125, I suppose it's time to see how Van Persie operates in his new role as a placenta forward. Ah, dear. Comedy gold. Now, let's finish off part one with Liverpool-Man City. Big game this, Sean Ingle.
It was, and it didn't really start till about 50 minutes in. It was absolutely dire. I mean, I've seen, in terms of spectacles, I'd probably go to see Lighthouse Family up there as the most dire thing I've ever seen. But
all right. Put it in terms we can understand. Chris Rea-wise.
Chris Rea, I mean, it's probably the Auberge album, kind of the halfway through where it dumbs down a bit.
Right. Would it be like going to see Chris Rea now and he announces that he's just playing new stuff?
Yeah. But his new stuff's very, very impressive, actually. A lot of people are calling it a return to the heights of the Auberge album. Yeah, but put this in perspective, this was a must-win game for both teams, wasn't it?
Well, not really. If they're aiming for fourth place, as I suspect.
Well, Liverpool have a shocking run of results, and then there they are, Man City turning up, one of the big rivals in terms of the top four finish.
You sort of suspect Liverpool, they didn't want to lose. They've had such a bad run. But I was a little bit frustrated with the City's lack of ambition. For a team that have spent so much this summer facing a side like Liverpool that were struggling, you'd have thought they'd have really gone for it. Instead, they played a sort of 4-1-4-1, left Adebayo on his own up front, and didn't really start for the first half at all. They looked much, much better when they brought Tevez on and really went for it. But there were 3 points there for the taking, I think.
Speaking of lack of ambition, what about Rafa Benitez, who, despite all the injuries, or in fact, even with all the injuries, decided still not to start with Benny Yoon? He's arguably most talented attacking creative force. Put Babel on with disastrous consequences, and then put Benny Yoon on when Babel got injured, but then took him off again to defend a 2-2 draw at home to
Manchester. But I think Benny Yoon did have a few injury problems before the game.
Yeah, I think that's right. But he does seem to be on some sort of experiment to play into the hands of his critics, doesn't he? He does seem to almost perversely make those decisions that people rail against him for. So.
This game needs Fabio Aurelio.
Exactly. Yeah. Send for Aurelio.
And still no Aquilani.
No, quite.
All very disappointing. Of course, big week this for Liverpool. Could be the end of the road for them in the Champions League if Fiorentina beat Lyon. Liverpool, meanwhile, they will be at Debrecen, who they beat just about in the first game at Anfield. And Torres is out still for that game, and Babel as well, who looked very miserable on Saturday. Now, there you go. Well, let's look at the Champions League games and all the delights that await therein right after this.
Football Weekly from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Welcome back, everybody. During that musical interlude, we've just been having a quick debate about how soft is Ryan Babel. Barry?
Well, no, it's just I actually thought myself, and then Andy Gray, who, man, it's not often I agree with him, but he reckoned that Babel was just being soft and he could have stayed on and run off his injury.
Well, he took a big whack on his foot, and then the physio took him off to the sideline and spent about, I don't know, 3-4 minutes trying to get him to go on and have a go. And Barber kept pointing at his foot, saying, "No, but I'm injured." And then he got him to go on, and he walked around a bit and then sat down in the centre circle. It was very petulant. Yeah. Gerrard came up and said, "Look, would you mind run it off or something?"
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how badly hurt he was, obviously, but it seemed to me that he was just...
If he doesn't play tomorrow, though, I would suggest that he was...
Surely a physio now shouldn't be messing around with all these kind of... He poured some water on his boot, I think. He should have got some afterbirth in there, it's true. Sorted him out. As we say, all of Liverpool's best efforts against Debrecen will be for naught if Fiorentina beat Lyon, qualifying themselves thus for the last 16 of the Champions League. For the first time in a decade, this would be a big thing if Fiorentina do get through, because so much has happened to them in the meantime. Oh, and I'm looking at you because I know these other two are going to wander off and play with a yo-yo or something in the corner.
But it's hard to overestimate how big this round of games are for Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? I mean, even though we've got a tendency to overhype everything at this stage of the season and say this is a huge game, it's a massive week. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at what it means for them in revenue terms, in terms of their own future ownership, in terms of their season going forward, then it is massive.
What does it mean? Spell it out for us, Owen. How much will they lose if they get knocked out?
So I think the figure's in the region of 10 million in terms of what they might lose going forward. But I think you have to add on to that. There's TV rights money. There's negotiations going forward over obviously the ownership of the club. You've got a managing director who's trying to sell, who's out there trying to actively sell a minority share in the club at the moment to try and bring in more cash. They've got the issue of the ground hanging over them. And it just plays into all of that. And if you don't make the knockout phases of the Champions League, it kind of it will knock back their business plans.
So throw things forward 6 months. If Liverpool get knocked out now and they don't reach the big four come May, what kind of state are Liverpool Football Club going to be in?
Well, they're already in a position where their current owners have got no extra investment to add, and the big thing at the moment is them going out and looking for this fresh investment. And if you're looking for fresh investment on a global scale, then you were almost in they wouldn't quite be in the same boat as Leeds United.
Right.
But you have to put it in that global context and say, if there is money coming into the club, where's it going to come from? Mm. And are they going to be an attractive investment for those people who've got the money to spend?
So why are all these various businessmen that have come in and they've been linked with Liverpool, why have none of them actually bitten? Because there have been talks about, you know, various people in Dubai, various...
There's always talks about various people in Dubai, you know, and some of these names aren't worth the paper they're written on. But certainly a lot of the wariness is still down to the Hicks-Gillette situation. You've got two owners who clearly don't get on and who are basically at war with one another still. So, I mean, coming into that situation is not a particularly attractive one.
All right,
now, yo-yos.
Owen was disturbed by Barry holding up a piece of paper asking where his yo-yo is.
I was asking if you wanted a game.
Oh,
in the
right.
Corner while they discussed financial matters.
I thought you were talking about yo-yo clubs, sorry.
I'm just going to whiz on because we've got so much to get through in this little Champions League roundup. I mentioned Fiorentina, what it would be, because they've been bankrupt and gone down to the fourth division in the meantime. They might be going back. The good news for Liverpool fans is that they've got not only Adrian Mutu out, but also Stefan Jovetic, and Gamberini is a big player for them at the back. All out as they take on Lyon, who were the club who knocked them out of the Champions League last season. And indeed, this weekend, Fiorentina lost at home to Parma, who have a rubbish away record, 3-2. So they don't come into this game in the best of shapes, Fiorentina. Now, I have plenty of other Italian news, but producer Ben's waggling a big finger at me, so let me just race through the headlines. Totti, 49 days out with an operation on his right knee meniscus, comes back in.
He's got a lovely hat-trick.
A hat-trick in a half an hour.
Why do you think
against Bari, who had the best defence in Serie A, so pretty impressive. The third goal is an absolute stonker.
Why do you think British people don't love Totti like you and I?
Because he's never done it on the big stage, in the games which English people have been watching. He's not done the kind of stuff that he can do.
But he was very good when he came on against Australia in the World Cup quarters. He did all right.
Yeah, okay, that game. Yeah, but see, you've already got the 2004 spitting thing to get over, and the fact that so many times when, say, they've come up against an English club... He hasn't turned it on for Roma. I think plenty of times he's just not plain been playing for Roma. I remember the Arsenal games and stuff. Now, Zenga got sacked. Walter Zenger's got sacked by Palermo. That's awfully sad. You know, remember the Italy legend? Yeah, 1-1 draw with Catania, local Sicilian rivals. And so he's out the door. And you may have seen this in the news sites, I don't know. The president of a third division side has been arrested in an inquiry into alleged fixing of some matches in Italy. One game from the second division from two seasons ago and seven matches from last year in the third division. Featuring the club Potenza, and they're down in the deep south of Italy, where all sorts of exciting things happen. But anyway, more on that when we know more. Now, Juve, on the Champions League theme, are taking on Bordeaux. No Gorkov, apparently. A lot of people said he had a rotten game against Ireland.
I didn't think he was very impressive. I don't think any French player played well against Ireland, apart from their goalkeeper.
And Elko was all right, actually, I thought.
Yeah, I suppose. Give me that.
But anyway, Juve have only conceded one goal so far in the Champions League. They've got the best defence in the competition. Interesting. They are at Bordeaux. Win would qualify them there. Oh, and Bayern Munich are taking on Maccabi Haifa in the same group. And if Juve get the win against Bordeaux, that means Bayern are out, which would mean, conceivably, could be the end for Van Gaal, who's in big trouble. He had a draw this weekend against Bayer Leverkusen in the Bundesliga, leaving Bayern in eighth place. Milan, meanwhile, will be taking on Marseille. They've yet to have a home win in the Champions League. They, of course, famously lost at home to Zurich. They had a terrific 4-3 win against Cagliari over the weekend. But the other big game, of course, is Inter's visit to Barcelona. Ooh, that's a scorcher because it's so tight in that group. There's only 2 points between all four teams, so everyone could still go in. But as things stand, if Barcelona were to lose at home to Inter and Rubin beat Dynamo Kiev in the other game, then the defending champions will be eliminated. Let's get Sid Lowe on the line. Is that Sid Lowe in Spain?
Yes, it is. How are
you? Sid, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks.
Great news. What have you been up to this weekend?
Well, watching lots and lots of Spanish football, which has been kind of entertaining. And it's been a very strange weekend in which lots of apparently unexplainable things have happened, all of which can, though, fortunately be explained, or at least they can if you look close enough.
Interesting. Now, what kind of thing have you been seeing? Barcelona drawing 1-1 at Bilbao and thus losing the lead in the Liga?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, of course, we were talking about that in the build-up to the weekend, weren't we? That I thought that was there was a reasonably good chance of that happening. Barcelona furious with themselves, I think, for the way that it happened, though. They completely dominated the game and created lots of chances, went 1-0 up through Dani Alves, and then just kind of stopped. It was almost as if they thought it was done. Athletic Bilbao scored a goal, scoring again, which is extraordinary. Really. This is a guy they picked up from the second division B, who their fans almost treat as a kind of lucky mascot character, because he's really not very good, but he runs around like mad and works really, really hard for the team. And he scored the goal, which means that Barcelona lose the leadership. Real Madrid now top with a point lead. It's the first time they've been top since the back end of the season before last, in terms of actually having a point lead. This year they've been top a couple of times on goal difference.
Sid, what you were saying about Barcelona also, I think, applies to their Champions League performances. I was looking at the stats earlier. They've only allowed 7 shots on their goal in the 4 games so far. And yet, as we all know, they're struggling, and they've got this huge game against Inter on Tuesday. What's the mood been like on the Barcelona papers and amongst the players ahead of the game?
Well, of course, what they're really doing is they're trying to say that everything's fine. They're trying to point out that it's all under control, that they're still playing well, that it's not all over. But they are concerned about this. Now, I think that in a way, the fact that as you rightly point out, Barcelona limit their opponents to very, very few shots in every game. They completely dominate possession in a way that I just don't think I've seen a team do for years and years and years. But almost that's the problem. Because they dominate possession so much, when other teams do get a chance, it's invariably on the break, and invariably, therefore, a reasonably clear chance, because Barcelona send a lot of men forward. They carry the ball forward. Virtually everyone joins the attack. So I think they're concerned about it, and they're concerned about it as much as anything else, because there's a slight feeling of deja vu. Now, obviously, it's far too early to say this, because they're unbeaten in La Liga. But this is a little bit reminiscent of the back end of the Frank Rijkaard period, when again they would keep the ball, but they would allow themselves to get caught out by silly attacks or by one-off opportunities. So yeah, they're worried about it, and they're particularly worried about it because it also underlines one or two other problems, which is that they haven't won away now in the last three La Liga games. They've drawn all three of them. Admittedly, those are difficult games. You know, Athletic Bilbao is one of them. Away at Valencia is the other, and a third. I must admit, off the top of my head, I can't remember. But they were beaten by Rubin Kazan. They were unable to score away against Rubin Kazan. And there's a concern that this is just the tip of the iceberg, that if physically they're not right, they just lack that little bit of edge. And as I've said a million times, they have a very, very short squad and one that can't really assimilate too many injuries.
Sid, they've got one or two injuries heading into this big game with Inter. Am I right in thinking that both Ibrahimovic and Messi are in severe doubt?
Yeah, I think it's quite likely that one of the two will play, and I have to say I don't know which one. Ibrahimovic looked like he was ready for full training on Thursday, then aggravated what's basically a pulled muscle in his hamstring. He's expected not to play. He didn't play at the weekend. Messi went off at the weekend with an ice pack on his thigh, sitting on the bench, and was initially expected to be out for 8 to 10 days, which would mean not only the Inter Milan game, but the Real Madrid Barcelona game at the weekend. They're now saying that Messi could make it, but it does seem that if he makes it, it will be very much a case of them forcing him a little bit and taking a flight risk, which they don't want to do. But I think when you watch Guardiola and the way that he's dealing with substitutions, which essentially is not to make any, I think we're seeing now that he really doesn't trust what's on the bench. He really doesn't think the squad is long enough.
Meantime, back in the Liga, it's Real who, of course, take top spot after their 1-0 win at home to Santander. But, says a note which I think you've dictated to producer Ben, they are rubbish and everyone knows it. And you have a theory, Sid.
I have a number of theories. It's really quite interesting watching Real Madrid go to the top of the table this weekend, because everybody's kind of scratching their heads and going, how did this happen? This team are really not very good. I've been back over the match reports from every one of their games so far this season, and in every single one of those match reports, there's at least one comment that doesn't necessarily use my word, calling them rubbish, but does somewhere along the line say, hang on, this team are not particularly convincing us. And I was looking at something else, and I discovered one of the secrets of Real Madrid's success. Now, I was talking to someone the other day about why it is that Mallorca are doing so well. Mallorca currently up in fifth place. They have the best home record in La Liga, joint with Real Madrid. And that best home record basically involves six games at home, six victories. And this is a Mallorca side who've got virtually no decent players, or one or two. They've got a massive financial crisis, and they're doing really well. And you think, well, how has this happened? And then you look at their fixtures and think, oh, they've just played the rubbish teams so far. They've played Jerez, Tenerife, Valladolid, Racing Santander, Almeria, and who's the other one? I can't remember who the other one is. And then you look at Real Madrid and go, hang on a minute, Real Madrid have played those exact same teams at home. So that's part of the reason why they're doing so well. Jerez, Tenerife, Valladolid. And you look at it and you think, well, maybe it still is true, despite everything, that Real Madrid haven't yet played really good sides. And when they have done, they've been beaten. Of course, they were beaten by Sevilla, they were beaten by Milan, they were beaten in the Copa del Rey by Alcorcón. Now, I do think that Madrid have so much firepower that they don't necessarily need to play well. And I also think there's a slightly overcritical stance from the media, and I'd probably actually include myself in this, in that because you spend that kind of money, you expect them to be brilliant, not just good. Yeah. But it certainly is true that for them to be top of the league now, is surprising, to say the least, for those people who've actually sat and watched them this season.
Right, but they've had easier fixtures than Barcelona.
I think broadly speaking that's true, yeah.
Right. Clonmel says, can you ask, Sid, about last night's Malaga against Zaragoza game, the end of which was fast score, 7 minutes of injury time because the ref lost complete control. This sounds like fun, Sid. What happened?
It was described by one of the papers in Spain as the ugliest game of all time. And given that Malaga have a guy at the back called Wellington, who I've already told you about, and puts the boot in every time, although there's actually no N in it, so it's Wellington rather than Wellington, they were filthy, Malaga, when they played against Barcelona. They tried to do the same last night to Real Zaragoza. Zaragoza continue with it, and it was a truly appalling football match, but sort of entertaining in that nice kind of dirty sort of way.
Right. Sid, that's magnificent. I tell you what, I look forward to hearing your reaction to all these Champions League clashes in Thursday's pod.
Yeah, fantastic. Speak to them.
Good. That's our whirlwind roundup of the exciting Champions League events that await us this week. Still to come, lots of posts and our exclusive report on the MLS Cup.
Sid talk to the dog in Spanish or English?
Did Sid talk to the dog?
Well, no, I just heard her.
yeah,
barking, and then I spent the rest of the time he was wondering.
He speaks to her in English.
Does the dog think in English or Spanish?
Is it an English dog?
No, it's a Spanish dog with an English parents.
Right.
Or master and mistress.
Right. Oh, plenty of posts this week, most of them concerning the fallout to the France-Ireland game. RTMIE posting in saying, these things go around and come around. Let's not forget from earlier in the campaign when Ireland were against Georgia at home and were 1-0 down and going nowhere when they were given one of the most ridiculous penalties of all time.
Yeah, but there was another contentious decision in that match, and Ireland finished about 16 points ahead of Cyprus or Georgia in that group, so it's kind of irrelevant. I can see the point, I can see why people have been dragging it up, but I've,
on the scale of things, it's not quite there.
Well, I've been embarrassed by some of the stuff I've read by just on message fan forums, message boards, written by journalists in newspapers, including our own. I won't name any names, but just some of the hysterical, you know, fainting, and they're like ladies swooning and on their fainting couches. It's just, he fouled the ball. These things happen. Get over it.
Right. Was it Ireland's Diana moment?
Pardon?
Was it Ireland's Diana moment? Do you think the way this, you know, everyone was sort of
I don't think it was quite that bad, but, you know, to some of the people calling for, you know, Henri to be hung, drawn, and quartered. As someone said on the post, when Roy Keane when is
Dirk,
the voice
it was
of
Dirk.
Reason.
When Glendinning and Roy Keane are the voice of reason, you know the world has gone mad. Ireland, he continues, were unlucky, but that is football, so let's move on to the World Cup. Bumblebee Sting says, Roy Keane, pointing out a bit of irony here, Roy Keane telling the Ireland players to get over something that happened less than a week ago while still moaning on about not receiving a phone call in 2002. Hello, kettle, I'm the pot, says Bumblebee Sting.
That thing, Roy Keane's, I mean, I agree with pretty much everything he said, but he is a massive hypocrisy and contradictions. And he's complaining that John Delaney, the head of the FAI, who's a bit of a clown, to be honest, didn't ring him. But would
in
he have
2002?
Would he have taken the call? No.
Right. Barry, can you ask Tony Cowards on tweet, can you tell us anything about the rumour that... Who is this?
George Burley. My handwriting's
not
that
George
bad.
Burley is going to replace Roy Keane at Ipswich.
No, I can't. I read in the Daily Star this morning, I think, that I was just catching up on my, you know, Jordan leaving the Celebrity Jungle in Australia news, because she had to do seven something or others in a row.
Right.
Which I probably was not the first time she's done that. But anyway, apparently the suits at Ipswich are meeting to discuss Roy Keane's future and to draw straws to see which one of them has to go and tell him he's fired. And if anyone is brave enough to do it, then maybe George Burley might take over.
I don't know. Does that seem like a wise idea?
Well, he was good with Ipswich before, but, you know, never go back. Isn't that what they say?
It's not gone well, has it? The whole Marcus Evans, Roy Keane, and this guy Simon Clegg, who used to be chief executive of the British Olympic Association, took over as chief executive there, and it was all going to be a winning team at the beginning of the season. And as you say, I mean, I think the most difficult bit might be who tells him he's got to go.
Indeed,
but they're unbeaten in six, and they were shipping three or four goals a game, which they're not doing anymore. So there is signs that he's turning things around. He's shored up the defence a bit. As I say, they haven't lost in six. They've drawn five of those six, though. But I'd stick with them for a while, yeah.
Right, it's a five-year plan. Anyway, are they bottom of the table still?
Second from bottom. Peterborough beneath them.
Right, okay. Dan McKeown, on the whole notion of, you know, video technology, etc. And reports of Matt Scott writing about this in Saturday's Guardian, that as a result of the Thierry Henry's handball of shame, FIFA are going to fast-track the five-referee system for next year's World Cup finals. He says, I hereby poo-poo the notion of the Mickey Mouse five-referee system being used at the World Cup. And he cites the example of the Fulham-Roma game recently in the Europa League, which, of course, uses five referees, and the mess that the penalty area official made of things in what was a spectacularly badly officiated game. Video evidence or nothing, says Dan McKeown. Very interesting indeed. Well, there you go. Those are some posts. And now, Barry Glendinning, it's time for our MLS Cup review, which doesn't involve you or a countdown 30-second clock, but does involve the return of the much-missed Leander Scherlakens, late of the Low Countries, but now in the United States, from whence he brings us this report.
Hi, James. How are you?
I am very well. Where in the wide world of sports are you?
I am in Washington, D.C.
Crikey. And you've moved out there recently?
Yes, in June.
Right, just in time for the MLS season. I must say, you're much missed. Plenty of people, pining for your roundups on the Eredivisie and that. But luckily, you're ideally placed to bring us all the excitement of Sunday night's big showdown between Real Salt Lake and the LA Galaxy. Fire away, Leander.
Well, 46,000 turned up at Seattle's lovely artificial pitch. There was actually a good atmosphere, or as the commentator put it, it feels like a little bit of England here. David Beckham was slightly injured to his right ankle, playing with several injections. He didn't have a huge impact as his LA Galaxy were playing against Real Salt Lake. He sent lots of poor passes, actually. He was playing out on the right and had to drift into the center a lot to get the ball. When he did, which wasn't often enough, Galaxy were dangerous in the first half. But I felt that Real Salt Lake were slightly better in the second half and overall.
So they're now are they now the MLS champions?
They are indeed, yes.
Are they calling themselves world champions by any chance, Leander?
No, not in this one.
All right. What are we to make of the fact that now you've got 15 MLS teams, eight of whom, so almost half of whom, make the playoffs. Real Salt Lake were the eighth to make it, having actually lost more games than they won in the regular season, and yet they are now champions.
Yeah, it does bring up some legitimacy issues, especially since of those 11 games that Real Salt Lake did manage to win of 30, two of them came away, which is a very poor showing. They were the last team to make the playoffs, meaning in effect that in 15 teams in the standings, they were eighth. But Real Salt Lake are a plucky team of unknowns who have shown that the playoff system doesn't always award the best team the title the way you would in a straight regular season crowning a champion, where they beat the defending champions Columbus Crew in the quarterfinals in a two-leg matchup, and they beat the favorite Chicago Fire in the semifinal and then LA in the final.
Leander, how and you talked about 46,000 in the stadium. How big was it on US TV? I know they showed it on ESPN. Do you have any idea about viewing figures and how did it sort of permeate into the US sports consciousness over the weekend?
Not really. I was just looking at today's Washington Post, and there was a four-column article, very small, on page 5 of the sports section, I think. That's the only place it turned up. Beckham had, of course, been brought over to lift the interest in the sport to a higher level. His debut had a rating of 1.0, which means slightly less than a million homes. And to put that in perspective, Freddie Adu's debut drew 1.3, and there was a girls' university softball game, which nobody cares about, in the same weekend, which drew 1.8. And the average rating in MLS games before Beckham came along was 0.2, which is to say 200,000 homes. And his first competitive game, which wasn't his debut, he drew a 0.4. Now, to put that in perspective, on the same weekend, the Scrabble All-Star Championship got 0.5.
How much?
0.5.
Wow. David Beckham, will he be returning to the MLS?
Well, that's the big question. He has an option to get out of his contract after this season. He did sign a 5-year contract for what was reported to be $250 million, which actually was more like 27, as he's only making $5.5 million a year. And when they stated the $250 million figure, the LA conveniently included the $220-odd million they expected him to make in endorsements. He does have an option to leave after this year, which means he could leave on a free transfer. However, he also has an option allowing him to buy an MLS franchise if he completes all 5 years here, which he does intend to do. And he has indicated a little while ago that he would be interested in returning, saying his family is happy.
He should get into getting a Scrabble franchise. Now that's where the future is. Well, there you go. Leander Schellackens. That was extraordinary, you know.
Given the amount of coverage has been over here, which is, again, sort of pages and pages, and you would come away thinking that he has succeeded in his mission of reinvigorating football in the States, and it's really interesting to hear that actually, no, it's the Scrabble Championships.
The Scrabble Championships.
And it was Landon Donovan, America's golden boy, who missed the penalty as well.
Skied it.
Oh, I saw it this morning. I really like this new
spider cam.
Spider cam. It's great. It's you can see the whites of their eyes, and that's very innovative and good.
Good.
Is it a relatively new thing,
or I've seen spider cam for about 5 years now. Or so. Yeah, it's been around for a while. Yeah,
it's more of that kind of thing we need.
Yeah, technology, video technology.
Have you heard about this thing called the internet?
That's the stuff of madman's dreams. Now, that's it for today, he said, rearranging. This is what people do. And when they do the end, they get the sheets of paper and they go bang, bang, bang on the thing. And they get their pen and they put it away in their pocket. That's what I'm doing now, because we've reached the end of today's pod, Sean Ingle.
Thanks, James.
Thank you for being on board with all your editorial know-how and stuff. Fantastic. Barry, thank you. The homely, knobbly, stick-esque...
It's racism. I'm going to leave the studio and lodge a complaint with HR that I've been racially abused by my colleagues. You little Middle England twat. Oppressor. I could feel the heel of your hand-stitched Italian loafer on the back of my neck. Like the English have had for the last 900 years. You've got me started now.
Yep. And Owen, thank you so much.
No problem at all.
Ah, marvellous. Thank you, producer Ben. And you, the listener, as well. And we'll be back on Thursday with the show known as Extra, with all the extraordinary events that are going to take place in the next 2 days. Make sure you join us for that. Bye for now.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.